This meeting is being recorded.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is David Murphy, publisher of the National Black Unity News newspaper. I want to thank you for joining us this evening. Also for being on our podcast. And we're going to be discussing just a few things about Memorial Day. We're going to be discussing about this upcoming event that we are hosting. It takes a village. We're also going to be discussing some of the things that's taking place in and around this country. You know, there's a lot of things going about Tulsa, Oklahoma, you know, the Black Wall Street and other institutions that has been burned or overthrown by other people. And, you know, and they're just finally getting some play in the media. But, you know, we've been aware of it. And, but unfortunately, a lot of people in this country is not aware of some of the atrocities that has taken place against African Americans, Black people, melanated people. And even up until this day, that all types of things are taking place. And it's unfortunately, because after all, we have made such great contributions to this country. We have been jailed over, you know, put in jail. We in jail. The jail population, the largest population in the world is right here in the United States, and the majority of them, which based on population, is African Americans. And after all of these things have taken place with us, and people marching on the Capitol, and these people are still angry with us. And they feel as though that they have the right to be angry at us. And as soon as we do any little thing, we are violent people. But if you look at the histories of people, you see with a lot of violent things that take place. But I'm just going to leave that alone. But I want to introduce you to my co-host, Brother Satawi Jaheed, soldier, powerful brother. Been out there on the front lines for a multitude of years, and he always brings to us a special reading. And so I'm going to turn the podcast over to him, and we'll be right back. Brother Satawi, you got it, sir.
All right. Thank you, David. And as we celebrate or commemorate this Memorial Day weekend, which was first put together to honor the Black soldiers of the Civil War and what they stood up and stood for. So I would advise our listeners to just Google and check out the origins or history of Memorial Day. Okay, our reading for today. We do a reading on here every time we come on these airways from Daily Motivations for African American Success. The author of that book is Mr. Dennis Kimbrough, who wrote Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice. And the reading for the day goes like this. I got to hand it to you. The difference between luck and ability is time. And that quote right there was given to us by Reginald Lewis, who was a tremendous entrepreneur, who came out of Baltimore, Maryland, went to Dunbar High School, and did a lot of entrepreneurial stuff. And he wrote a book called Why Should White Guys Have All the Fun? And I advise people to read that book. It's a very, very good book. And the reading for the day goes like this. Are you disenchanted with the hand that life has dealt you? Then change those circumstances to some more favorable ones. The destiny lies within your hands. Perhaps a parable will help you see my point. High on a hilltop overlooking the beautiful countryside of East Africa, lived an old man whose wisdom was sought by many. Legend has it that he could answer any question anyone asked him. Two young boys believed they could fool the old sage, so they caught a small bird and headed for his home. One of the boys held a little bird in his hand and asked the old man if the bird was dead or alive. Without hesitation, the old man said, "Son, if I say to you that the bird is alive, you will close your hands and crush it to death. If I say the bird is dead, you will open your hands and let it fly away. You see, my son, in your hands you hold the power of life and death. It's a very important quote the old man gave them. In our hands we hold the power of life and death. When applied to your life, this parable has a much deeper message. Within your hands lie the seeds of failure or potential for greatness. You are capable of achieving your heart's desire, and the qualities that are necessary for such accomplishments lie within you at this very moment. Believe that you have been placed on earth for a purpose. Fulfill your purpose. You're shaping your own life, your own destiny. Make sure your future is in capable hands. You can always find a helping hand at the end of your sleeve. And I think that's a very, very good reading for the day, that, you know, that we do have the power of life and death is in our hands. And, you know, we need to make sure that we understand that, so that when we do things, that we do not do them in a hasteful way, but in a way that really helps us with getting the most out of where we're headed and what we want to do and what we want to accomplish. So, hey, David, that's our reading for the day, and I'm turning it back over to you, sir.
Well, thank you, sir. And I want to take this time. You know, people that know me know that, you know, I promote the National Black Unity News newspaper, and because it's a powerful tool. It's a rare tool because we don't let them represent up the media, but it's a necessary tool. And I want to encourage our listeners, those who are on Facebook Live and those who are on Blog Talk and our other formats, that I know it's a holiday and we have a very small cast with us today. But I want to welcome you all, but I want to make a special welcome to a young lady that I met recently. And her name is Denise Robinson. And Denise been, I call people soldiers, people that put in work in the communities for a number of years. But she's done a lot of things in so many different areas. She helped out with the homeless. She helps out with our youth. She works, I believe, the trauma center. You know, when people, you know, going through all kinds of things. She, I'm going to let her tell a little bit of her story, if she don't mind. And Ms. Denise Robinson, how you doing?
Good evening. How you doing?
I'm doing excellent. I'm glad to see that you came on. You know, I just sent you out, and she showed up. You know, one thing you're going to find out about me, you work with me, you come on my format, I'm going to put you out there. That's what I do.
I see.
That's what I do, you know. No, because, like I say, because so many of us have so many valuable tools, you know, that God has blessed us with. And the more we share that, the more people get to know that we have all of these servants and people that is out there helping us, because often, like I always say, is that major media or main media do not highlight us too much, you know, in a positive way. And so one of the things that I do is always find people that I know doing positive things, so that so our families, our communities, our nation know, and it's being documented. See, even what we're doing, that it's being documented. And so you know once it hits this airways, you don't know where it's going to end up at, but I do know if it's good news, it's a good thing, and we need all the good messages or messengers that we can get our hands on. And so why don't you just introduce yourself and let people know who you are and what you do.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Denise Robinson. Y'all don't have enough time on this airway for everything I've been doing over the last 30 or 40 years. I would just like to start off saying I love to serve. I'm a servant. I've been volunteering for approximately 50 years through the school system. I'm retired from law enforcement. I'm actually back with law enforcement. I'm with the Baltimore Trauma team. I'm first graduate from Roberta House. I do a lot of crisis responding. I'm a chaplain with the Baltimore City Police Officer. And I do service the communities and the surrounding areas through both my church, the trauma team, and I'm also a part of the Women's Auxiliary in the National Baptist Convention, where I am the president of Home Mission. So I do a lot of mission work and a lot of community stuff.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. So welcome to the call. And I also want to let people know as well about an upcoming event next week, next Saturday. It's called It Takes a Village. And the reason why we're having this event is because I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but a lot of people may know or may not know that as we speak now, there are several organizations raising money for me right now. And the reason why they're doing it, because they came up with this, one of the concepts I want to talk to you about tonight, is how we can empower our businesses, our individuals that's been working in the community. And we've done this with a gentleman by the name of Leon Purnell. We raised over $11,000 for him. But I'm going to tell you what happened with this. Not only did we put him in the spotlight, let him know what his organization do, but at the same time, we raised some money that, you know, is needed. You know, it's not all that he needs, but I'm just saying, but it helps. But also, he now got some volunteers out of this, and like I say, a lot of people now know what he does. And so it's a win-win-win situation around. And like I always say, by the grace of God, there go I. I could have been one of those people who actually needs his services. So, you know, and so my family members may have used his services. And so, you know, and then here come David Murphy. So they selected me, you know, and it was a pleasant surprise. But I've been out here for 40-something years, you know, publishing newspapers, helping people, serving. And it's very rare that somebody comes to me and say, I want to do something for you. Or even say thank you. You know, but I don't do these things that I do to get thanks or be put in the spotlight. You know, I'm going to do it with over 30. I've been doing all this stuff in the background all these years, so it ain't about the spotlight. That's obviously. But I'm going to tell you this. I'm human, and I don't care who. If you're human, you like to be, you know, appreciated for what you do every now and then. It really makes, you know, that somebody, you know, appreciate what you do. And when my brothers and sisters got together, and not only did they start talking about me, and I thought that was, you know, it's strange, but it feels so good to feel appreciated for once, you know. And not only appreciated, but they're putting money in my pocket too. Now, you know, that's what you use them. I mean, it's great. I mean, this I never had this kind of support, and it's so great, it's so wonderful that it hit my spirit so greatly. And I'm the type of person, that, like I said, I'm a servant, and I call myself a servant of servants. And so what I decided to do, or what I was inspired to do, because my steps are ordered, I was inspired to do, because when I say, you know, the concept that they had is by helping people who've been out there helping people. And I thought that was a great concept. And I think, you know, if we help enough of us, all of us can be empowered. And so that's why I decided to, or was inspired to put on this thing at the Our Social Club next week. Because I do know there's a multitude of people that I came up with, through the ranks up with over the years, that has put in a lot of work. And just like myself, they don't get no recognition. They're not in the spotlight, but they're constantly out there and still working. Some of them out there have been out there longer than I have, and longer. And a couple of my mentors going to be at this upcoming event. And so, you know, so, but when I made the phone call to quite a few of the people, because if you look behind me, there's just a few that you can see on here. But it's close to 60-something people. Just I'm a spotlight. Now, you know, when you do things like everybody's not sure, life get in the way sometimes, all sorts of things happen. But I can tell you this. Everybody will have an opportunity to say a few words. Not only we can't go over 5 minutes, but just like I said, we're going to turn this into a documentary that will be, I don't know where it's going to end up at, but I do know we're going to blast it all over the place, all over the country, all over the world. And it's going to be professionally done. I'm going to bring in some people. I know how to do all of these things, but I'm going to bring in some people to help me. And we're going to, put this thing going to be tight. You know, it's going to be very professionally done. And, but the beauty of this whole event is that the people that's participating in it, the ones who are being highlighted, you know, when I invited them, some wonderful things begin to happen. you know, I told them I want to recognize them, and, you know, they end up recognizing me right over the phone. He going, but what you were doing, you know, like that. But, you know, but they told me on in their own ways to how much they appreciated me recognizing them. You know, because like I say, very rarely that people even say thank you for what we do. And so they were extremely appreciative. I could feel it in their spirit, in their souls. And so when we come there Saturday, it's going to, the synergy going to be so powerful in that place. And we're going to be at a place where they call Ground Zero. Their main media dean to try to make Baltimore look bad or, you know, put a negative view on it. But out of that same area, I believe out of Ground Zero, it's going to be such a powerful thing that's going to come from out of there this Saturday, because it's going to be another spotlight shown of people who actually do things, build things up, but that same media do not cover. And I want to announce that our sister here who just spoke, Miss Denise Robinson, she will be there as well. And then we also have another gentleman. A gentleman that he know I'm coming at him. I highly respect this gentleman. You know, because he's a sharp brother. I mean, sharp. I'm talking about, to me, I think he's one of those smart brothers. You know, he know how to dot an I and cross a T. No, but he's a sincere brother, though. You know, he loves his people. He had dedicated so much of his time and effort to try to organize people, not only just here in Baltimore, throughout the whole diaspora. This brother, you know, I mean, I don't know, you know, but he's one of them people I'm talking about who put in so much work and get very little recognition. And he will be spotlighted that day too, but he will be playing so many different roles because he's also going to be the DJ and everything else. And Brother Clifford, he does so many things. He has a little sideline thing he does. And that DJ, and I'm going to tell you something. Why I have you here, I had a birthday party at the same location a couple of years back at the Art Social Club. And I just wanted to do so. I'm up in age now, you know, so I'm DJ. I don't know if tomorrow is promised. You know, they ain't promised to none of us, but, you know, I take my time seriously. But I gave a little party there, and, man, Brother DJ Cliff, he let it out. And people right now to this day, they still come up to me and tell me, man, that music was so great, you know. And all I did, I told Cliff, I said, look, I got a list here. And I said, I don't know if you can get all of this stuff, Chris. He just give it to me. You know, he said, man, he said, I got you. And man, did he have it. I mean, like I say, the people at our social club, I mean, both of them brothers tell me every time I see them, man, that music, you know, they said, and they give the events there. He said, that was the best music they heard since they, I'm tooting my horn too. They had a part of that, but, you know, No, he's a well-rounded brother. How you doing today, Brother Cliff?
I'm doing pretty well, sir. How are you?
I'm still here.
All right.
And I'm still looking forward. So that one day at a time, as I say. So I just keep it going. But, no, we just talking about, you know, some general things. I know it's a holiday, and we supposed to have had a guest on. He may still come on. The gentleman from out of South Carolina who was talking about this powerful networking system that he has. But a lot of talk, I want to ask you some things, Cliff, from your perspective, because I appreciate your perspective so much, because you always bring things up that I may not have even pondered on. And all of a sudden now, from your perspective, they bringing these things, here it is Memorial Day, and now they talking about Tulsa, Oklahoma, and places like that all over, and they blasting it all over the place now. And where was this information, where was these noise, where was all that noise at 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 20 years ago? Why do you think all this is taking place now?
Well, I think the main reason why you're seeing it in the quote-unquote mainstream media now is because of the fact that this is the 100-year anniversary. So they're big on round numbers like that.
Okay.
So this is the 100-year anniversary of the race riot, of the Tulsa race riot. As a matter of fact, the Tulsa race riot started on this day, 100 years ago, May 31st, 1921. And it went until June 1st of the same year. And part of the problem has been, at least up until the last several years, and I watched two documentaries about it last night. One was on MSNBC that Tremaine Lee did, titled Blood on Black Wall Street. The other one was one on the History Channel, which, interestingly enough, NBA player Russell Westbrook was one of the executive producers of. So now, you know, Russell Westbrook gained a lot of, his stock has risen in my estimation, and not just because he plays for the Wizards, which is where I'm from. But that show was titled Tulsa Burning. And it went into a lot of the deep, both of those documentaries went into a good bit of detail with regard to Tulsa, Oklahoma, Black Wall Street. Some of the same people appeared in both documentaries, but they did kind of approach it from slightly different angles. Tremaine Lee's piece talked a little bit more about efforts that the Black community in the Tulsa, Greenwood area of Oklahoma have made to rebuild a lot of what had been taken from them in 1921. They had to rebuild elsewhere, and they had to do it despite the fact that the city of Tulsa, Oklahoma was attempting to essentially dispossess, they did actually dispossess the Black community of all of that land, almost all of that land, 40 square blocks originally in Black Wall Street, and now there's maybe two blocks of that are left, that are occupied by Black businesses. So the city of Tulsa and the state of Oklahoma has been trying very hard to essentially bury that history, even as they were using quote-unquote urban renewal, which was for them was a euphemism for Negro removal, to attempt to dispossess the survivors and their heirs of the land that was rightfully theirs. They were at the same time trying to prevent knowledge of what actually happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma from coming out. So a lot of the delay is because of the efforts by the quote-unquote city fathers in Tulsa, Oklahoma to keep a lot of that stuff quiet because, as they say, they don't want all these people coming along agitating and making the good white citizens of Tulsa look bad. So that was part of it. And it's a similar kind of thing to another Southern bit of Southern history most people don't know about, which is the 1811 Slave Revolt, which took place 35 miles upstream from New Orleans. And a gentleman named Charles Deslon overtook his enslavers at the Andrew Plantation, gathered a group of freed Africans together as they went from one plantation to another, liberating Africans there, gathering farm implements and other weapons, and they marched down the Mississippi River toward New Orleans, and they got within 9 miles of New Orleans before the U.S. Army turned them back and basically routed them. The 1811 Slave Revolt is considered one of the greatest slave revolts in American history, but almost no one knows about it because, once again, the city fathers of New Orleans have done everything they could to keep that history quiet. And there's a brother I know in New Orleans named Leon Waters who's been doing a lot of work to revive that history, to awaken that history. He's renamed a couple of buildings and I think at least one school in the New Orleans area for a number of the participants in the 1811 slave revolt. And so, I mean, this is just a typical kind of a political maneuver by the heirs of the racists, the white racists who have terrorized our people from Rosewood, Florida to Wilmington, North Carolina, 1898, to Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921, and all of the areas, and I've got lots more research to do on this, that happened during what they call the Red Summer. And it was right around that time, I think somewhere in between 1898 and 1921, somewhere between Wilmington and Black Wall Street, there were just a whole string of instances where white mobs essentially visited violence upon what were thriving black communities. And they used things like the specter of falling under Negro rule. They used communism as an excuse. All the same things that they're using right now in places like Georgia and Texas to pass these restrictive voting laws. They're saying, well, they're communists, or that they're committing voter fraud. They said this back in 1898. They said in 1898 in Wilmington, North Carolina, that the blacks were stuffing ballot boxes and were committing voter fraud, all the while the whites in Wilmington, North Carolina, actually were stuffing the ballot boxes. And they were threatening black residents in the predominantly black town of Wilmington, North Carolina. They were threatening them that if they came to the polling places, they would be assaulted and they would be lynched. So it's to me, a lot of this is a case of the pot calling the kettle white, but basically I would say that's part of the reason why we're not seeing stuff on the Tulsa Race Riot Massacre until now. Combination of obstruction by the city fathers in those towns, continued pressure, and as much as some of us have issues with Black Lives Matter, the fact is that Black Lives Matter coming out when it did put a lot of national and international pressure on, and then that facilitated the people in Tulsa, Oklahoma, putting even more pressure on those officials to make them finally start to excavate and dig up the mass graves. They put a lot of these people in mass graves, which is why they don't know how many people died. The estimates were between 100 and 300 black people were killed during those 2 days of that Tulsa race riot. So now they're finally excavating the graves. And now they're finally, the Republican mayor of Tulsa has basically called for the full excavation, a full investigation. So I guess he's probably not going to be on Trump's Christmas list.
No.
So, but he's calling for all these things to go on. He hasn't called for reparations yet. He says, well, reparations, maybe that'll come later. But right now he says he's worried about just the investigation. But you had all those things going on. And then I guess the other thing, too, is because it's a centennial anniversary, like I said, people go for 100 years since. So MSNBC's eyes have been opened, so they gave Tremaine Lee whatever resources he needed to be able to go to Tulsa and make his documentary. The History Channel said, we're going to go ahead and we're going to do this documentary. My guess is Russell Westbrook has known about this for some time. He got involved as an executive producer, and so now here we are.
Let me ask you something. I think all kinds of ways. You know, that's why I asked you that question, is this. Now, like I said, you know, a lot of us are aware of it, especially black historians are aware of all of this taking place, like you say, but the mainstream America, like you say, they hushed it up.
You know, I'm not sure all the historians even know about it.
Yeah.
Because people in Tulsa didn't know about it.
Yeah.
Tulsa residents were unaware.
Yeah, let me just say this, though. Because this power struggle that's going on in America right now with the so-called Democrats and the so-called Republicans, and I know it's deeper than that, but because certain forces are doing certain things, I mean, very boldly about it, too. I mean, extremely bold, like you just said, in Texas and these voters, right, the same tactics they used way back when.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just, do you think that some people, power brokers in the Democratic Party, is trying to use any means necessary to combat them, you know, because the way things are going, not just Trump, but, you know, Trump kind of emboldened them, but what's taking place with the Capitol, these voting rights laws are taking place all across this country. It's a serious thing, movement. I'm going to look at things in a strategic way. There's a lot of movements taking place right now. And do you think that they pulling up the race card now to help embolden their cause?
I'm not sure because the Democratic Party itself looks like it's kind of the Republican Party is going through their little internal struggles between the right and the ultra right, and the Democratic Party is going through their struggles between the moderate center and the left. And so like you've got, for example, the Squad, you've got Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar and Ayanna Pressley and AOC, and you got people like that who are pushing it from the left side, and they're not shy at all about talking about the racism that still exists in the United States. Then you've got the people who are in the leadership of the Democratic Party, your Pelosi's and your Schumer's and that sort of thing. So they're trying to keep them from, as they like to say, pushing the Democratic Party too far to the left. As far as I'm concerned, the Democratic Party has been pushed largely to the right for the last 20 or 30 years, ever since Bill Clinton ran for president. So what AOC and the Squad are doing right now, as much as people like to denigrate them, that once upon a time used to be the mainstream of Democratic Party politics back in the 70s. Now, of course, it used to be the mainstream of Republican Party politics 100 years ago, but that's one of the reasons why, for example, whenever I hear these Democrat versus Republican political arguments come up, I think, okay, well, yeah, that might be valid for right now, but I have to tend to look a little bit more at what it is that they're trying to do. What are the policies that they're trying to push? Because the Republicans even now are trying to still call themselves the Party of Lincoln. They haven't been a Party of Lincoln, at least since the 1960s. But the Democrat, all of the people in Congress, as far as I'm concerned, are still operating within the confines of politics. They're still operating under, you know, what do the congressional rules say that we can do and all this sort of thing. So whether or not they're pulling out all the stops, I don't know. Maybe they're doing everything that they feel that they can do as politicians, as elected representatives. Maybe they're doing everything that they feel that they can do without getting themselves in trouble. But there's still too much of the "I want to get reelected" kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
And not quite enough of the serious commitment to principles, which is, again, why I often say politics really comes from two key root words, poly for many, and ticks being blood-sucking creatures. So,
okay.
So as a result, how far we're going to get in the political realm is going to be limited. We can go and we can try to vote all we want, but then these jokers are going to go, like they're doing right now, to Florida, to Georgia, Texas, and close to 40 other states, and try to make it even more difficult for us to vote than it was before. We can say economics is the key, and we can say we're going to build our economic base. Well, that's what our brothers and sisters did in Black Wall Street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what they did in Wilmington, and they were bombed out of existence. So one strategy ain't going to cut it. One idea ain't going to cut it. So whenever I hear someone say, well, culture is the way that we would do it, or economics is the thing that we must do, or if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. And I listen to all of those, what I consider to be cliches, and I just kind of have to shake my head because, you know, well, first of all, just because a person doesn't vote, if they're following the laws, if they're being a quote-unquote good citizen, if they're behaving as a human being, they retain their human rights. They retain the rights to be treated with respect, with decency. And if someone treats them with disrespect and indecency, then they have every right to complain, whether they voted or not. So I would say that if you're taking on one of those strategies and you think you have the answer, you're both right and wrong at the same time. It's not one of those things. And it seems to me that the only thing we haven't tried is all of them at once, together, in a strategic, coordinated fashion.
Okay, look, I got a few more people that I see just coming in. And it's Kim, is that you on the line?
Yes, it is, Baba. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. And but look, I know you can already go across the waters in this week.
Yes, we are program in Tanzania.
Okay, and you know, I wish you hope you have a safe trip and everything. But Kim is one of our members of the National Black Unity News, and she carries out information all around the world, and I appreciate her for that, you know, because she's a talented young lady. Matter of fact, I'm not sure, but I believe that's how I met you through Brother Cliff on here. You know, yeah.
Sister Kim on her own property in Africa by now.
Yes, Brother Cliff, we waiting for you to come visit.
Uh-oh. Well, I got to get information to you also about the SRDC summit, which is going to be in Monrovia, Liberia, in November.
Yes, my Louise keeps me well updated. I'm
good.
Definitely going to be present.
Excellent.
Sister Kim, tell us what you're going to be doing over there. Tell, you know, give us the little information, what's going on.
Well, we're taking 12 instructors from the United States. Some of them you may know, even from Tupman City. We've got Mama Rashida Foreman Bay from Womb Works and one of her lead directors, Stephanie Williams, and her son, Omari Foreman Bay. We also have out of Washington, D.C., spiritual leader Ia Marie of the Ile Mole spiritual group, the Yoruba spiritual practice. We also have out of Cleveland, we have Mama Ade Olomo. She's with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, as well as the Juneteenth celebrations coming to teach art and community development. Of course, we have another Tupman City soldier, Haki Ami. You know, he is a success scholar and author and also a media personality locally. We also have Sister Angela Sales out of Cleveland, Ohio. She's coming, and her son is actually still there now in our study abroad programs. So we're going to do the Summer Learning Institute, and so we're teaching the art of possibility. As an artist, a lot of people, they put us into the performance or hired help category, but we know in the African worldview that art is a part of the functionality of the community. And so it's our job to help it operate and help it to function at its highest capacity. And so we're finding solutions together, using art as the modality, as the pedagogy to find resources in our community, to be creative and innovative in designing a sustainable solution for our collective African future. And so that's what we're doing this summer with Tanzanian learners, with some of the American expats that are coming in, and we're bringing in a delegation from Uganda as well. So we're excited. And yeah, we'll be there for 2 weeks, and maybe in October when we return, you'll come with us.
Yeah, well, if we can get these old bones cranked up and glued together, they just make all things possible. You know, and besides, you know, I always wanted to go to the continent. You know, I want to go any place, really. You know, I just want to get up and go. But yeah, but it will be an experience. I can imagine.
If you're Africans living in America, you know, it's really not a luxury. It's not a once in a lifetime thing. But if it has to be a once in a lifetime thing, absolutely, you should make sure it happens. It's our right. It's a rite of passage, but it's our ancestors' wildest dreams.
I don't mean to cut you off, but guess what? I know what you're talking about, because right now I go to North Carolina. That's where my family, you know, come from, and that's where all my grandmothers and all of them is buried in this one place. And grandfathers, all in this one little plot behind the church. And I go there. And something just overcomes me. You know, I just sit there, I go to pay homage to them, and it just, something just comes all over me, you know, my ancestors. And they just the latest ones. But, you know, you just don't want to taking us back from generation to generation. I can imagine what it would feel like for me, a person like me, to go to a place like Africa and to go into some of the countries of Africa.
Well, before it's all said and done, please let us help facilitate that experience.
Oh, well, you're commissioned now. You got it. And so it is done. And you know, and I believe it will happen because we already spoke on it already.
Absolutely.
And so it's going to be happening. But like I say, if anything I can do to assist you, you know I will, and I do appreciate you. I think you're a wonderful person. You do wonderful things, and I wish we had more like you, you know, because you know, you're not a talker, you're a doer. And you keep yourself busy. You're extremely busy, I know. And you do a lot, and you motivate me. So I appreciate you for that.
Well, thank you, Elder. You know, the only thing you have to do is keep doing the National Black Unity News. You're one of the elders that aren't just talking about it. You have a tangible product, and you're building a movement around it. You're inspiration. We need more elders like you. So thank you. You're my inspiration.
I think I'm getting all pumped up. Yeah, but we have another young person on here too. Brother Milan, are you available? If you can you unmute yourself, sir? Yeah, we have another young man on here. I don't know if he can. Yeah, there you go.
Peace and blessings, y'all. Can y'all hear me?
Yeah, peace and blessings. This is another young man that works with the National Black Unity News, who's an organizer, making things happen, working with our youth. He's a youth himself, I like to put it. But he's a young man that's, you know, putting in work, and I appreciate him for that. Let people know what you're doing, brother.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, again, my name is Malon Butler. I'm actually a neighbor, a partner, a friend of Brother Murphy, a member of the National Black Unity News, and the founder of a group called the Indigenous Business Association. IBA Inc. is a resource generator of Black-owned businesses. We've started off by building a database of registered shoppers, supporters of Black-owned causes through a membership card that can be rebranded by different business owners. We moved on from that into taking that database to create a green book. We created an app where you can find all of these different businesses, the resources they offer, and what kind of deal or discount they're willing to offer you for being a registered supporter of Black-owned businesses. We've taken that concept. We've moved it through networks from Baltimore now, officially from Baltimore to California. Our app right now is one of the fastest growing apps of this nature. It's one of the only that is a rewards program that connects the consumer's shopping experience. And right now, as I made a feature for Juneteenth, you're gonna see that our map actually details every brick and mortar partner that we have. Every time you drive by one of those locations, it notifies you that you've passed an IBA business. So we have grown and done some growing to try to make in this microwave generation instant gratification. Wanted to bring the resources to your fingertips. And on our Juneteenth opening, you're going to see our hybrid to promote this. Not everybody who is wanting to participate in patron Black businesses has phones. Not everybody is going to be able to download our app. So you'll see on page 19 with our partnership with the National Black Unity News, you can turn in and cut out coupons and go to each of these locations if you had a card. That way, whether it's paper or paperless, you can still participate in the IBA system. And our goal from there is to grow and connect with as many Black-owned causes and agendas as we possibly can. And like I said, IBA is that method of recirculation for how you keep your dollar in-house. We're going to be highlighting Black-owned businesses in our own grocery store that we launched. We'll be launching Juneteenth as well in partnership with Farmer Nell called the Be More Green Grocery Store. It's using all of our technology on the inside, and most of the clientele from IBA are the ones who have stocked the shelves of their store. So this is a one-stop shop. Find yourself an IBA, find yourself streamlined in the wraparound services all over the globe. That's my story. I'm sticking with it.
I know you are. And, yeah, you know, I appreciate you, brother, you know, because you're doing the good work out there. And I know it's not easy, but, you know, continue to work, you know. But stop struggle, brother, you know, things ain't going to happen. So, you know, you're going to be tested, tried, and everything else. But, you know, just hold on, you know, keep moving forward. And you do have people behind you, you know. So, you know, don't be afraid. Don't be like me, man. Don't come up, you know, I got this thing. I'm going to carry this whole load on my shoulder if I have to. You know, it took me almost a whole lifetime. You had not because you asked not. So, you know. And, you know, there's a lot of people around you wants to help, you know, and need to help because you're doing it for them. and so for us. And so I appreciate you. And so, Brother Vernon, you want to share some things that you're doing, sir? If you do, just unmute yourself, sir. Brother Satawi.
Yes, sir.
Do you want to share some of the things that you're doing?
Well, one of the things I'm doing is helping with creating a course through this program that I'm using from a book I got inspired from called Digital Millionaire, where I'm create a program where I'm teach people how to be able to do taxes, and the course will cover how to go about, you know, what you need to do in order to, you know, create a tax clientele and all of that. And I'll be airing that program tomorrow night on Blog Talk Radio. I'll make sure people have the link so they can tune in and listen. I'll be airing it at 8 o'clock tomorrow night on Blog Talk Radio on Home Based Business 101. So trying to provide some solutions to people that's looking to earn extra income and do something. I've been doing taxes for like over 20 years, and you know, and it says like all of us we have knowledge that if we do not share it, it end up going to the grave with us. So I'm trying to make sure the things that I know how to do that I go about teaching other people how to do them myself.
Okay. Now, I want to remind everybody that because I think it's 1, 2, 3, 4, Kim would be there, but she's going out of the country on that day, and about the event next week at the Art Social Club, it takes a village, and it's going to be a host of individuals who will be sharing their stories, why they do the things they do and why they continue to do it. And this documentary will be featured because of for several reasons. One of the reasons is because we need to, you know, connect generations. You know, see, this is what we're doing on this show right now today. We have, you know, the Millennium Generation X, as well as Baby Boomers on here. And we do work out of one publication. And so, you know, we understand, you know, I can't reach everybody, at least I try to, but I do know young people can communicate better with young people and vice versa, but we all need each other. But oftentimes, the tricks that people play on us sometimes piss us against one another. Now, I've been hearing a lot of young people saying, you know, some of you old folks need to get out the way. You know, you don't know nothing. You know, and let us take it, because you don't understand what's going on today. But, you know, that's not so, because, you know, we want to help pave the way. But, again, that's because they don't see you, and they don't, you know, if you're not in the spotlight, they don't have no idea what you're doing. And so this is one reason why I'm having this event, so each generation can meet one another, appreciate one another, and hopefully work with one another. Like this Will Brother Cliff got up here, because we have so many different businesses, services, and a lot of us are multi-talented. We can be on 3 or 4 of them spokes of that wheel that he has up there. And so I can be in media, I can be in, you know, economic empowerment, I can be in quite a few different things. But the main thing is that if you don't know by now, if you don't have your, if you're not alert as to what is going on in this country and throughout the world, is that forces and sources are coming together for the betterment of whatever their cause may be. But one thing I'm quite aware of is this. All over the world, people come to this great United States, and they have one thing that I think they know have in common when it comes to relating to us. I believe, this is David Murphy, that they don't see black people as their equals. I think they see us less than, because they've been taught that. And I also know they've been taught another thing about us, that we are consumed. We will buy, no matter what color you are, you know, no matter what nationality you are. But when you go to their services or their traditional way of doing, they don't do this. It's not reciprocal. You know, they don't come to us. They bypass 10, 15 of them, get to their own. We're the only people, I think, in this whole world who does that, take our resources and spread it out to everybody, because that's our nature, or maybe we don't have nothing to buy nothing from. But at the same time, but I do know they see that in us in a lot of different ways. I have even been approached one time from a group of people wanting me to put together a black, you hear this, Brother Malone, a black directory. They was going to pay me to put together a black directory for them. They want to know who we are and where we are. And I asked them one simple question. I said, why would you want me to put a directory together for you? And I said, you have deep resources and stuff like that. I said, I'm going to put a directory together. That's what I've been doing, putting the directory together for myself. I said, why are you asking me to do this? And they simply said, he said, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. He said, you black people, when it comes to the United States, he said, y'all are the most together people than any of which people who consider themselves a foreigner or minority. I know a lot of people don't like that word, or minority in this country. You know, they say we Asian, because they were Asian, to be quite frank. They say we are Asian. You know, he said, we don't get along. He said, the Japanese don't deal with the Chinese or the Vietnamese. We don't deal with one another. You know, he said, y'all the only people when it comes to culture and color and everything that seem like y'all have it more together than anybody. And I never looked at it that way, but then maybe again we do. And if that's the case, we got some work to do. But you know, from their perspective, I could have took it another way, because I guess they say, you know, it looks like we got together because we all look alike, I guess they say, you know, and so they think that all of us on one accord or something like that. But they do know we on the front line when it comes to standing up for their rights. See, they benefit great more than we do from when we stand out going to the street and protest this and do that. They the ones see the benefits from it. You know, oh, they love us for that. You know, we get beat upside the head, bitten by the dog, but then they want to get sit at the table and eat. And we still out there getting bit by dogs and stuff, you know. But that's the way they see us sometimes. And so that's why it's so important to have a Brother Cliff around and have a young man like Brother Milan around and a sister like Kim who's traveling all over the place, taking information from this place to that place and that place and connecting those dots. We got Brother Vernon on here who have his own TV station and does events and everything else. And then we have somebody else on there by the name of Khalid. If you'd like to say something, I'm not sure who you are, but you're welcome to come in if you like and share who you are, what you do. But if not, you know, that's good too. But if you'd like to speak, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me, brother?
Yes, I can.
Brother David, you've been knowing me for years and years, okay? So I know I play. That shows how low-key I play, you see, when I come up on the Zoom. I'm incognito. But
You still incognito. I still
don't know. Yeah, I know. I tell you what.
I know who you are.
Look at this. Our mutuality is with Brother George, for one thing.
Okay.
And I had a sit down with you at Terra Cafe when we had the men's meeting.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Black men,
unifying black men, yeah. That's right, yeah, okay. I mean, many, many occasions, okay, but up through the ages. I mean, when you recite your story, I easily identified because I was right there.
All right, good. You're a soldier then. Yeah, you coming through the ranks, huh?
I don't plan on being a Folger.
Oh, well.
Always be a soldier, not a Folger.
Okay.
So, as I listen to people talk, you know, you got some very dynamic people. I really appreciate you and what you do. And don't forget, we had that meeting with Eartha, and you and I are supposed to communicate on situations.
I got you.
Yeah, now you face to face with the name, right?
Yeah, I got you now, sir.
Okay, all right. Okay.
Yeah, you're a very sharp brother. Yep.
Reflection of you, my brother.
No, you said something that made so much sense sometimes, you know, when you, especially, you know, for those who may not, you know, I don't consider myself a journalist. You know, some people may put me, you know, associated with something like that. But you said something to me, you know, made so much sense. You know, instead of saying sometimes, you know, when you have a dialogue with somebody, ask some questions. You know, it's a safe way of communicating with people when you ask questions sometimes. You know, instead of saying, why did y'all march on Washington and storm the corn? You know, what is the purpose of, you know, just asking questions and stuff. So it takes you kind of, you know, out of the kind of the harm's way, or put you in a different position and put them in certain positions and stuff like that. But, you know, like I tell people, I'm always the student. And, you know, and I'm always willing to learn something. And when I talk to people, you know, I gather so much from people just by observing and listening. And I appreciate the things that you do, sir. I really do.
Let me say this. What's happening, I'm a here and now person, okay? Here and now. I believe that we study history in order that we can be effective in the here and now. So one thing that's happening in Baltimore, the last power political white administration was with Schaefer. And when he was leaving the scene, then that was the beginning of the black community being able to vote people that look like us. We have not really come into our own yet. But we are beginning to. See, when we start looking at the fact that you got, this is a waterfront seaport city, Baltimore, a key city in the world, and it's majority black. But it won't be that way if we sit on our thumbs. It won't be that way very long. 8.5 miles of waterfront, and we don't own one square inch of it. We don't have any kind of, you realize the number, the impact of economics that would have on black Baltimore if we owned, if we were owners or had access to some of that, a fair share of that 8.5 miles of waterfront. That has to be addressed. That has to be addressed. And it has to be addressed by everybody, and that's our cause to live, that we should not want to go to our grave and leave that same condition behind.
Somebody got some TV or something on. Okay.
You are muted. You can mute or unmute yourself by pressing star 6.
So that's extremely important.
Let me ask you something about this waterfront. I hear what you're saying, but I heard a statement said on the news the other day. It was on the one of them PBS stations. And it was a guru, what he called up a guru or something. And he was saying about, you know, he used to go down to the waterfront, but he used to travel to various cities. And he said they used to be these big old cargo ships used to be sitting up there at the docks. And you know, and he was saying they was the whole, you know, 35 tons, I mean, 1,000 tons or something like that, you could say. He said compared it to the day ships. He said you almost weigh 10 times, 20 times as much as the, you know, encourages, you know, 10, 20 times more than they do. But he said that same little ship used to sit there, and they used to have all of these workers called stevedores and all of them, and it would take them almost a week or 2 weeks to unload one of them ships. you know, to get all the cargo out and then reload it back up and sort of send it on its way sometimes. Mm-hmm. And he say, now you can go to the same cities and stuff 20 years later. It's just 20 years later that you can have 10 of them docks sit up there, and they can have these big old cranes and stuff that come and unload these ships. And they say, not only do they can unload the ship, don't take them with, they take them one day to get rid of them and send them on their way. And so you can, he was saying that, can you imagine not just here in those one ports, but all over the world, how many jobs were taken, you know, taken away from, you know, from that, just from the people that worked there and that lived there too, you know, and everything. Because, you know, and then he was saying that if you don't pay attention to how things back, you know, especially this day and time, if you look back now, those of us are still living, who could look back 25, 35, 40 years and see the transitions that have taken in so many different industries and locations that if you don't pay attention now, another 5 or 10 years, you know, we don't know where you're going to be at. And then when you were speaking on this waterfront, and here we are, we weren't then there back then, and we're not there now. How do you suggest that, or do you have any idea how we should pay some attention to that and how we can gain some of some of them miles, and what can we do with them?
Good question. Number one, we should make that our major cause for this decade that we've entered into. This is 2021 now.
Mm-hmm.
2020. We've entered 2020 to 2030, and don't forget how this relates to a Maryland law, the 1638. Are you familiar with that?
Not. I heard people mention it, but I'm not, you know, caught up on it or you can
look
even I hold up real, you
look
know, deep conversation about it, but I heard people speak about it a little bit.
Look it up. Maryland exclusion law, still on the books, and it's very similar to Plessy versus Ferguson. But it deals with it's in Maryland, and it's a Maryland law that's on the books, and look it up. So because it's pretty deep, you know.
Yeah, but I think it does say something like we supposed to be allowed to some of that territory.
It says, no, it says just the opposite. They ain't obligated to give us nothing.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so people can talk equality out of one side of their mouth and got laws on the books that they know back them up. And what they're saying is we're too silly to attack the law.
And do you think that's one of the reasons why, you know, because Brother George is aware of that, and so now he's opened up a door that they don't want us to enter in?
Oh, man. See, in attacking him personally, that's what opened all this up. So it's not about Brother George the person. It's about the cause for the people of Baltimore, which happens to be a majority black city. So they're denying our generations of youth. Our generation of youth run around in frustration, shooting and killing each other at the rate of 300 a year, 3,000. 3,000 every decade. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people. Those potential fathers, grandfathers, etc., and leaders. They're wiping us out like that, you know, putting guns in our hands and all crooked police running wild. Okay? And then you got mayor sitting on his thumbs beholden to somebody like some white politician in a majority black city, afraid to move out on stuff that affects the people. How can you be that kind of hypocrite? See, I don't like playing with that stuff. You don't play with your children's history. He's a youngster. He's got a long ways to go. He ain't got to be afraid of nobody. Nobody. Just make sure you're clean and move forward with strength. Ain't got to kiss nobody's rump. The people will put you in.
Well, let me ask you a question. You know, anybody can jump in on this. You know, the more I talk to people.
David, let me jump in here 1 second.
And when you bring truth to light and we have, like that well I keep seeing behind Brother Cliff, we got so many fronts that we need to be on. You know, not just one here, one. We need to be on all of these fronts. You know, we need to be alert because if you leave one door unopened, they can come in there and spoil the whole everything. It's knocking right back down. And, and like I say, and see, you got a person like yourself and some other people, even me, because I was willing, you know, because I couldn't deal with so much. But I told Brother George that I'm here and I would do whatever I can. I use the resources that I have to you know, to work with you on this, you know, to work together. And I believe you know that as well. And so, you know, but like I say, you know, I do what I do, you know, I can do it effectively, but if you do what you do and Brother Cliff do what he does and then all of us, Brother Milan, do what we do, but we all need to come to Devon and do us some kind of way, somehow. You don't take the whole everybody because it only take a handful of us here and a handful of us there and a handful of us there, but we need strategically to battle on all of these different fronts. Because all of these different fronts, we are being attacked all kinds of places. And even in my industry, I tell people, I say, we own less than 1% of the media. So can you imagine the voice I'm saying, I'm talking, I'm screaming out, but look who's screaming back. Look how they shouting back in my little squeaky voice. You know, and unfortunately, the people that I'm squeaking at and the people they shouting at tend to lean towards what they say, you know, because they've been accustomed to it. They brainwashed to it. I understand that, you know, because that's what they tell them what to do to get up in the morning, when to go to bed, what to eat, who to date, and what's in and what's out, you know, and they go, you know, right along for it. But like you said, you said a key word of not being afraid to stand up against power, to be bold enough. To take a stand, because sometimes when you take a stand, you take that stand, oftentimes you will find there's others who will stand with you. But
a lot of what we think is power is sitting on, as the scriptures say, a house was built on different mediums.
Mm-hmm.
And one house built on sand.
Right. And they ain't effective.
And that's how a lot of that power that mm-hmm. we look at is so powerful. It's built on sand. In other words, they crooked as hell, and they don't want you to discover it.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have no power, you see, because they're crooked, and they're trying to make their filth work.
Yes, sir.
When you get ready to go on your trip, I don't want to leave without saying this. When you get ready to go on your trip, I will support you on that trip to Africa.
Okay, I appreciate that. I really do.
Yeah. Just remember that.
Okay, yeah, but I do. You know what I need from you?
What's that?
Yeah, I want you to support me on this trip I'm on right now, because because like I say, I see a lot of good things. I meet a lot of good people. I meet a lot of well-meaning people too. A lot of people have great wishful thoughts as well. But I do know, and the reason I know this is, and I can't go by nobody else. I have one person I can judge, and that's myself. I know when I get up and I know when I get down. I know when I should move and I shouldn't move, and I know when I don't do enough. You know, and oftentimes I don't do enough. You know, I'm talking just from my own perspective because you know, like I say, because I'm doing it just with me, you know, so I can't count. You know, I know a lot of people, but I don't count on a lot of people. So I'm a type of person that I would go with or without you. If it's on my heart, I'm going to stand up. And if I stand, because most of my life, that's the way I've been. Even though I'm associated with a lot of people, but you'll never see me in cliques and all of this kind of stuff, you know, because I'm independent. That's the way I want to be. Sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad that way. But at the same time, I do know this, as I've gotten older, and I do know, if you look at life, not even talking about outside, I'm talking about even in the hood, you can't just go around and walk up to somebody on the corner and say, you know, young man, you know, get off this corner because I know this wrong, this ain't putting your finger in, because you get killed if you don't approach them right. You get shot in the heartbeat, but if there's a way, you know, that I'm accustomed to, and then I can approach a corner. Because I come from the corner. See, I understand the corner. I'm familiar with it a little bit.
That's right.
But I do know I had to approach his brother with strength, with respect, though.
There you go.
And with love. You know, man, I ain't trying to hurt you, man. I ain't trying to cause me. I just want to help you. You know, I ain't look, you know, if you want to go that way, we can go that way, too. But before we go that way, let's go this way. Let's just have this, you know, let's just talk, you and I, man up. You know, and just have a talk. And then I expose me first to him to break his guards down. You know, if I expose myself, then he don't feel too much as I'm a threat to him. And then me and the brother maybe can dialogue with one another. And all I'm saying is this to everybody on here. You do the things you do because you maybe you passionate about it. It's on your heart. It won't let you go. I don't know why you do the thing you do, but I do know that the people that's on this call don't have to do this. You know, but if it just comes to survive, you know how to do that. You know, you can just do that and take care of yourself and live happily ever after. But there's something within each and everybody on here that makes them go that little extra yard, that pushes them over. And I don't know if it's a spiritual thing. Sometimes with me it is. But, you know, I don't know what motivates somebody else. But I do know one thing, and I believe this. It's scientific ways and everything. Just like Brother Clifton, and you're pretty heavy into all of this kind of stuff. You know how a cell works. You know how it expands itself. You know it needs this part to go there, and then it grows, and then it forms something else, and it keep on going and feeds off of one another. And I look at us, I believe we the same way. We the same way. When you look at the whole universe of things and look how minute we are, we just number like a little tiny cell, a little speck of nothing, you know, compared to out there. But at the same time, I do know, even though we this little speck, and we got our little speck that we operate in, and some of the specks, just like the negative things in the body and stuff, would attack this and did that for their own survival and stuff like that. But I do believe that if certain specks come together, like us, and we not on these airways, but, you know, if we sit down somewhere and we put our heads together, just a small group of us, I do know because I've seen it done before, that you can really make some serious changes. You can do things, like you said, you can't let the whole house in, because like you said, you got all kinds of crooks and crazies and greed and everything else out there. Of course, that's always going to be around us. But if you can find yourself a few people, just a few, that put your head together, that y'all have an understanding with each other, work with one another, because I've seen it happen. I've seen things happen. Just when a small group of people, they don't even let the whole, everybody don't even know what's going on sometimes. But they moving and shaking and doing certain things, and things begin to progress. And I believe that if enough of us, I ain't saying you have to do it with me or do it with somebody, but if you can find somebody that's in your car, see, to be quite frank with you, that's what I do with y'all. Mm-hmm. I put myself around certain people because I do know. They have like Brother Chris. I like that brother, man, because this brother digs deep. He's sharp, and he's sincere. And like Brother Vernon on here, me and Vernon, the young man. But see, Vernon going back, I go back with Vernon 25, 30 years. He came to me. He was a willing soldier. He would just do things, and he proved himself to me by just doing things. He don't ask for nothing. You know, he was just going there and put in work. Don't ask for nothing. I can trust this young man, and I do trust him, and I do things with him right now. I pour it out on him because I can trust him with it. He still may go out and do something else, you know, whatever he want to do with it, but I do know right now when I need him and this, that, I get things done with him now. I can get things done, and that's why I believe that we can do this thing, just like you and I. We can go down there. We can make some noise on that waterfront. It'll just take a handful of us and put us in certain positions and make some noise. We know how to make noise. You know, we know how to do a lot of little things that cause the doors to open up, so to speak, to bring suspect on things, you know, bring light.
Number one, right on the face of it, it is inequity. On the face, right on the, it's blatant inequity. Mm-hmm. You got if this Voldemort was majority, anybody else, Chinese, Hispanic, anybody else. I guarantee you they have ownership on the waterfront. See? So why don't blacks have ownership on the waterfront? Why don't we politically even, with administration, why don't we look at it? Why do we have white people over managing the Frederick Douglass Museum? How in the hell they get in their hands? Would they let us manage the Holocaust Museum?
Nope.
You understand what I'm saying?
Nope. You want to say something on that cliff?
I'm not going, you know, I don't go for the BS. I get tired.
I thought you raised your hand.
Right quick.
Yeah, I understand. Right. You know, I understand what you're saying, though. But see, but like I say, maybe, I hope you hear what I'm saying. This maybe. You get a few of us, or a day or somebody, to get together, man, and just have a little powwow.
We can do that.
Yeah, you know, just in secret, you know, you can't do things on this thing here.
That's true.
You know.
I got you.
Yeah,
I got
but,
you. Word
yeah.
to the wise is sufficient.
Yes, sir. And so, so we can do these things. And that's what I'm telling everybody. And I used to tell people this, too. And I know they listen out because they heard me say it before, so there ain't no shame in my game. But, you know, there's a little simple thing, like you say, a little simple thing that I see. Like this, these police killings, you know, this ain't never stopping. As a matter of fact, you know, it's been going on, still continue to go on. And one of the reasons they do this is because they can get away with it. There's no really repercussions. But if they had known, if they knew, I don't care what police station you belong to, if you had known that there was what you call a defamation league or something out there, that would take justice, if they don't get justice in the court, and they would take justice in their own hand, and there would be some retribution on certain things if justice wasn't served, then I can almost guarantee you a lot of that stuff would cease to be. Because
oh, yeah.
when Judge so-and-so start getting dealt with, and this officer start dealt with, and these lawyers and everything else, you know, being dealt with in a certain way because you're not doing justice, because they only get messed with you.
Man, we have a pitiful lawyer cadre in Baltimore.
Well,
I don't give a damn what religion, color, what they have as their philosophy, you know, what they claim. They're pitiful as lawyers. They're down on their knees praying to some idol god.
Well, you know, again, like
that's
I said,
other than the god of injustice.
Even them, like I said, out of all of these lawyers we have that I see, because there's so many great causes that can be taken up, should be taken up, if they had a little strength with themselves, you know, that they could, you know, just see as themselves, as a lawyer, you know, if you study law, you see those laws are not going being, you know, activated and you don't do nothing about it, that, you know, you shake your head. But then again, we are, and I don't like saying this, but, you know, a lot of us has been beaten down and been beaten up so badly. That, I mean, you can't, they, you know, it's hard for some people to even make, matter of fact, won't even open their mouth. And just accept things as they are. But that's why I believe, again, I keep on saying this and I continue to say this, I believe that when something is on your heart and it's heavy like that on your heart, and then sometimes maybe you are that person, pick up that gauntlet and run with it and just see how far you can go with it. And just maybe you get somebody to assist, and I believe you will. Because if they see that you are passionate and you're willing to stand up and take a stand, the average person, well, somebody will stand with you. I believe that. You know, if you're fighting for a just and a true cause, then
right.
I believe that will take place. But, you know.
Cause is the upliftment, is us being the guardians of the next generation's opportunity. And we've got to do that. We got to give that gift to our youth.
And I believe that. I do have a
quick question on that. Now, you said that the effective law is called the Maryland
Exclusion
Doctrine, Law.
The Maryland Doctrine of Exclusion, 1638. And it says, the Maryland Doctrine of Exclusion states the following. Neither existing black population, their descendants, nor any other blacks shall be permitted to enjoy the fruits of white society. The doctrine was created in the Colonial Council in 1638.
And that law is still on the books.
Yes, it is.
So then, what we need to do, it would seem to one of the first things we need to do is to essentially mount some kind of a legal challenge to that law, especially if they're going to go back there, if they're going to always go back there in order to defend.
You ain't going to do it with the weak-kneed lawyers, so-called lawyers we got in place.
Well, yeah. Yeah. We need to find some strong Pan-African lawyers somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking there's got to be at least one somewhere.
So, yeah, it is. They are, you know, but like I say, but, you know, again, like say, even this law here, like say, now, just by you bringing it up, brother, see the exposure that it's getting already. And that, because like you say, a lot of people, I wasn't aware of it, you know, things like that. But, you know, but I have ways of making it known. I have no way to spread it up, and you never know a brother sitting over there in California or sitting there, one of them lawyers over there sitting in there. Oh, y'all got that? I'll be in town.
That's why Baltimore is a well-run plantation. Uh-huh. See, when people say that, they think, oh, you speak in hate. Oh, you just hate the white man. Nah, man, bump all that crap. I'm dealing with facts. Humanity. Every human is sovereign, not free. Sovereignty. That's what we need to understand. That's the mentality we got to have.
I'd like to get some more information on all that, as far as a lot of what you're talking about, and also as far as the background is concerned. Of course, Father David Murphy, he's got the National Black Unity News. I'm connected with technically three websites, although the traffic on those three websites is a bare trickle compared to what one should expect it to be. But all these are things that I think we need to start to marshal and bring together, not only in a Pan-African media collective that Father Davis would be in excellent position to lead, but also to bring those together with a lot of the researchers that we have in this area, and the educators, and any lawyers who have any backbone. Bring all those people together, and bring them together with you.
That backbone, brother, are in law school, and those are the ones that will do the research.
Okay.
Well, we'll have to get up off it. I tell you what, though, there's something to look into, and we should look into. And I think it's going to be looked into, because, like I say, it's a reason for everything. It's a reason why you came on tonight, and it's a reason that that's the way I believe, and that we're going to have to take up that gauntlet and see what we can do. But there's a lot of gauntlets that we need to work with. You know, we need to, first of all, I hate to say this, but it's the truth, though. Now, we all got one thing in common that all of us work with. And that is us.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what a task that is when it comes to dealing with us.
Yes, sir.
And, but we do it in our own way anyway. And so even on that front, that's one of the main things. That's why I say we need to all just maybe some way, somehow sit down. Maybe next Saturday we can sit in the corner somewhere. And brother, colleague, look, I'm having an event next week at our social club. And a lot of people, even George, going to be there next week from 3 to 7, if you can make it, because, you know, we can all sit in a little corner together and put our heads together and say a few words to each other and just maybe.
You know what day that is?
Yeah, that's Saturday the 3rd.
Let me share with you what day that is.
What day is that?
My birthday.
Saturday the 5th.
You know how old I'll be?
How old are you? How young you be?
I'll be 20 years from 100.
Oh, well, good. With all that wisdom you have, and you still moving around, hopefully, And you still use them. I'm use them. I'm gonna be an eagle till the day I die. I'm serious.
Check this out, David. I'm a qualified tractor trailer driver.
And you still out there for real?
I got my license. If somebody needs a haul somewhere, I can jump in the truck and take it.
So that's right. Like I say, man. I'm going to be fighting to the day I die. I'll be 99 years old. You still should be running around with paper. That's what I am. That's what I do. You know, that's my work. See, it's a difference between a job and your work.
That's right.
So this is my work here. You know, this is my life, man. You know, so I do this with over stuff. But I'm going to have to get up off here. And I want to thank you, Denise, so much for hanging in there with us. You know, listen, you know, but that's the way we do sometime. And, we start off here, we'll go there, but I tell you one thing, we going somewhere. You know, we not being stagnant, and I know you do a powerful work out there. And just maybe if we can meet you next week, maybe we can put our heads together with you and assist you as too, because I know it's a lot that you do. But like I say, if we can put that will Cliff got behind together, that thing could be so brutal if he ran. And it can benefit everybody because I can use every spoke in that wheel to what I do.
I agree. I just want to say that I learned a lot tonight just by listening. My mother used to always say a good listener learns a lot. But I do want to add just a little bit as I listen. One thing about us, we don't read. Everybody don't research, study, and read. That's one thing about our culture. Another thing about us, we don't unify together. I believe we are the only race that does not stick together for the common cause. And the third thing that I want to leave with is that we always fight for the wrong things. They will get out here and protest and stuff over somebody stepping on somebody's toes, but they won't get out here and fight for the kids that's not being taught in school or not receiving. I mean, back in the day, we had the wood shop, the cutting shop, home economics, all the tools that we had, the trades in school that they have taken away, everything, the rec centers, everything they have taken away. You don't see nobody out here protesting or praising, saying about the right things.
You got a point there. You know, like you said, we go in there, somebody get killed, and we get killed every day. We do, be honest with you, I'm just saying. And most of them are unjust for some reason. Because you don't get killed for no good reason. I mean, right? You get killed for unjust reasons. You know, but again, we can sit up in all over the country, all over the world, holding up signs and be angry, too. I mean, be real angry.
Yeah.
But then our children being dumbed down, the things are taken away, and then nobody won't hear them out. Like you say, won't hear a word out of them.
And I might get beat up for this, but I'm in ministry sort of, kind of, and the churches doesn't even unify together.
Well,
you can have five or six churches within a block radius, and everybody want their own identity.
And you guess what? I had a thing up there. I used to have a newspaper called the Emerson Villager, and my goal was to unite Emerson Village. I was going to get all the what you call community leaders, which we had down there, 45, 50 of them up here. Then we had all of the churches, I was going to unify them and say, I was going to get them a free, everybody going to get free stuff in the paper, what you're doing in your church, what you're doing in the community association. And when I sit down to each one of the pastors of the church, I'm not going to work with them or that one or this one, because they don't do this. I mean, they won't even come and sit at the table together. And I got something to go in the state. And you're talking about community association. I mean, they can't stand one another. I mean, they ready to cut each other. I mean, regularly fight each other for a few crumbs that the city throw at them. And they get mad because this one get it. This one. And I saw all of the discord when I was just trying with that Emerson Village newspaper. And they ain't had an alliance up there in Emerson Village. All the churches, 40 West Alliance, they used to call it or something. All of them, Reverend Thomas, because that's when he was in Emerson Village, and St. Bernardine's and all of these churches up there. And they would come together and they talking about the battles they used to have sitting at their table together, you know, in my way. And that's why they don't do nothing together. They don't respect one another. And so, like I said, and these are not, you know, these are supposed to be educated people, you know, they're supposed to care about people. But see, this is what I see. I see that in my community associate. I see it in the religious community. And so the conclusion I came up with, again, I had to go out there and be the Lone Ranger again. I had to work with this one individually, that one individually, because we couldn't get them together. And then sometimes I maybe get one of them to talk to, you know, have an open event. But no, it's no cohesion, and it is going to take something. But I tell you one thing, what it would have took, but, you know, I couldn't get them together, though. And that is if the people would have stood up. But, you know, then, like I said, we got a task before us. But then again, now see, now that was just me going around. But could you imagine if I had you with me and Brother Cliff, Brother Khalid, and Vernon and everybody, we go out there together and we say, we represent this, we represent that, and this is what we want, not what you want. This is what we want as a community, as a group. And if you're going to be taking your, what you call it, your proceeds from the church, your funding from the community, you business owners, you getting your proceeds from this community, and you're not valid there. Like I say, you know, you politicians, the same thing. But see, if we had that kind of coalition to go to all of them groups and organizations and make them pay homage to us, you know, we demand it, not asking for, we demand it, that things could change. Because I did do it one time. I went into a couple of Korean stores. They saw the newspaper. They knew the power of a newspaper, though. That one Korean got on the phone and said, just because he got to live down the street from me, you know, from where my mother lives. I knew him personally. He got on that phone and called the association up. And they say it's better to work with him than against him. And every Korean up in Emerson Village shop, they put an ad in their Emerson Village paper. Every Korean, I didn't have, they already knew who I was before, you know, when I went there. Because the society, their association say, dude, we don't want no trouble out of them. Because he can start trouble. Because that's what I told him when I approached him. I said, you know, you get your money from the community. They said, now you should put something back in there. And I was just talking like a person.
Good trouble.
Yeah.
Good trouble.
Yeah.
Good trouble.
He ran between the lines. He got on that phone and called it in the garage up there, everything, put an ad in there, paper, the clothing store, everything, no problem. They supported the paper.
But see, you have already said it. If you had the right people and enough people, if
that's
we
right.
could just come
right.
together and unify. Mm-hmm. When we had the unrest with the Freddie Gray, I called my pastor and I said to him, if you're going to that walk, I'm telling you, y'all are not the answer. All different denominations came together, Muslims, priests, bishops, pastors, whatever they wanted to be called, arm in arm, walking the street. And I said to him, and I went to something over Macedonia. They had something. I'm from Northeast Baltimore, East Baltimore, and I wasn't from that neighborhood. But I did say this to them. 93, 95, during that era, Baltimore was number one in murder rate then. I lived in that neighborhood where them boys did what they did and what happened. The police always been on tape. And I see y'all ages. I hear the ages. Y'all know about the street numbers, the number writers, the bookies and all back then.
Yeah.
The police has been crooked from day one. We already know that. But what I said was in every neighborhood, no matter how bad they are, gang members or what, there's a big mama or somebody mama in that neighborhood they respect. That's
right.
Who should have been out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I also said, and I say this to my church and my pastor, if you invest in the community will eventually invest
that's
back
right.
into you.
Thank you. Thank you. And that's the truth, because if you go out there and you go out and get behind them pulpits and get out there on that corner and deal with some of them brothers and sisters, then you can make some changes. And guess what else? Then they'll come to you too. They'll come up in your church. They'll respect
you. I'm serious.
You
have
know?
To build a relationship
yeah.
with them, you know, and it will make a difference. I don't know what happened to some of us that have gotten older. We seem to lost our way and forget.
Well, a little bit at a time. A little. That's where things go. Just a little subtle things at a time. That you know. Just like when I was coming up. Now, I was one of them guys that stood on the corner from day from the morning to night, but there was always the old, they call them OGs now, or big boys. You know, they would always be a couple of them, bad to talk to you, too. If they had a liking in you or they saw that you didn't belong or something, you know, sometimes they would do it. They would grab you by your collar. If I catch you up here again, I would, you know. Then some of them will take you and just pull you to the side. No, this is not the place for you, boy. And, you know, this, that. And, but if you was weak or something, you know, like I say, but, you know, but that even they, we had a thing, you know, we had a thing called respect.
That's it.
You know, you didn't cuss in front of people, mother, when I was coming up. You know, even though we were doing bad, we would hurt you, we would fight you and do all this stuff. But you see somebody current come down there, everything, keep it quiet. Matter of fact, we'll walk carry your bags for you and stuff, you know. and we won't let you get beat up or nothing. You know, somebody see we see, you know, on the corner, you know, somebody attacking you, we ain't gonna let that happen. You ain't gonna come into the community with these stuff people. You know, if you're from the outside. But you know, again, a lot of the games of the rule of the games of the street has changed so great, it's such a disgrace now. You know, I mean, you know, even the thing of when everybody tells on everybody now. You know, one time it was a cold. They had a cold. Yeah, there was a cold out there. You know, you don't
and
do
guess what?
Things.
You don't have to pay them no more either. You used to have to pay them. You don't have to pay them.
Yeah. And there was even honor amongst thieves one time. Believe it was. It was a thing, you know, you don't do certain things. You don't cross certain boundaries.
Yeah.
And if you did, you got dealt with. But, you know, most people knew the rules. If you knew the rules, most of the time you wouldn't do it. Unless you did it intentionally. But see, even then, you know, but even now, but see, like I say, so many things have gotten away from, just like I say, them ships and stuff. If you don't have your eyes open, things will overtake you so quickly, especially this day. With this technology, a professor told me, he says that what he teaches his students today in this IT and everything is obsolete in 6 weeks, in 6 months. That's how fast it's moving. Right. He had to go back and rehab, you know, had to keep going back and telling us this book, this is out there. He got to go to school constantly. Constantly to keep on top of what's taking
the
place there. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a student. A professional is a professional student. Unless they're going to teach you some stuff that's really obsolete now. Unless you're teaching history or something. But most of this stuff, you know, is, you know, it's just nothing. I got this little watch on. I can push this thing here and do, I mean, now, who would have thought that 25, 30, 40, 50 years ago? Y'all would have had me struggling to a tree and burn me to the stake. But I was a witch. But that's the way it is. But that's the way we have to be. We got to learn to move swiftly.
Well, you also mentioned politicians, and that's where I have issues with.
You will always
because of the rules
with.
And the laws that they have now made. I mean, if you have a teenage daughter who decides she want to go get birth control. The parents don't have to know nothing about it. The parents can't go in and hear the conversation. You can't beat your children. You can't do this. You can't do that.
But yes, you got to sign a paper for them to go see to a museum.
And you just...
I mean, that kind of stuff. What kind of stuff is that? But
yeah, it's just so crazy. And all of that contributes. It's a plethora of stuff from all angles that contribute to where we at.
That's why it takes that will, Cliff got behind. That's why I said we will get together because you got the people in education, you got the people in politics, you got them who deal where their passion is at. But they got to know also because they can't move. I couldn't move. I'm in media, but I, for Emersonville, I was telling you, I couldn't move because I didn't have enough people behind it. But I didn't know I had enough power with that paper to make them Koreans move because they knew that I could cause trouble. But like I said, but I could have went to them same churches if I had all of y'all with me, and they saw, you from this one, and then that's good trouble. They don't want that, you know. So they're gonna work with it. They're gonna bow down. They're gonna do something. And then, like I say, when you got the people behind you, the politicians ain't gonna be nothing. They left they behind us. We choose them, you know. And but see, that takes time, and we have to have finances behind. It's a lot of things that we have to do that we don't do. Because, like I say, when you kept, you kept. And once they got you, they got you. You know, when you come in there and then you put this much money in this campaign and your own people don't do it, and this, that, they beholden to these people, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and so, but you know, that's why I said enough of it. Just don't stand up or stand with. You don't have to have it all. You don't have to have, like I say, I'm not trying to keep promoting this, but that well thing here, here you come from. See, you come from one angle. I'm on here in the other. See, we can make that spoke with the will of soul power. It don't take a whole bunch of us. But when we do something, we would have, like you say, when we go down to that waterfront, we would have the lawyers on it, the legal team on here. Then you got the media team that's going to be making some noise and bringing exposure to it. Then you got the people who like to protest. They be out there with the signs up. Then you got the people who just want to sit down and negotiate with them. You know, we got all of the mm-hmm. things working at one time, mm-hmm. coming at that person at one time. And then they see one thing about people, other people, they know when they see a force coming. Power respects power.
Mm-hmm.
And when they see that you got power coming and then you got your stuff together and you have an army, you strategically got all of these things running at the same time, they know, they just like we are. That man that was giving my brother so much trouble down there, now he got to think about all his other businesses too, you know. And then when he starts seeing that we can stop people from coming down there, causing trouble, people even coming down there in the first place, and then make those people who got boats and stuff down in there put pressure on them. This is what you support. We're going to be on you too, and stuff like that. And these people that sponsor them, these city agencies and stuff like that, they give this man business and stuff like this, and we put pressure. You are elected official, and you let this go on, you know, and we got all of this going. But when we all go down there, one or two of us, they can kick us around like anything. But when they see when we come down with a force, it don't take a lot of us. It don't take a whole bunch of us.
Well, that's what they fear. They fear the day that all of these different people come together and begin to behave as a team. The big problem that seems to inflict us right now is narrow self-interest. Unnecessarily rigid ideology, personal beefs, and it all boils down to ego. Whether you're talking about church pastors or revolutionary activists who say that their version of revolution is what we must do, or their version of the cultural nationalists versus the black nationalists versus the pan-Africanists, and all of these different groups that our enemies all lump into one group anyway when it's time to attack them. But we're so busy concentrating on what the minute differences are between us. And we're not finding ways in which we can actually work together. And all you have to do is be a sports fan to recognize how important that is. You take a look at any basketball team. Shaq couldn't win a basketball game all by himself. You can have the most powerful center in the game, and still you can get swept out of the NBA Finals. That's what the Detroit Pistons did to Shaq, Kobe, and the Lakers about 12, 13 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They swept them out because they had players on their team, the unheralded Detroit Pistons, who played together as a team. And unfortunately, we are not doing that.
That's right.
They say you may be able to do any number of these things that we're talking about. You may be an expert at these things. You may be an expert at more than one of these things, but you can't do them all. And what we need to do is we need to start bringing our different groups and organizations together. Like I said, Black Wall Street followed the economic plan to a T. What happened? They were bombed and burned out of existence. The Panthers had a 12-point platform and a free breakfast program, and they had political education programs. What happened to them? The FBI and the United States government, after launching a military strike against first Fred Hampton, then Geronimo Gigiaga, and then others, they captured a number of them, put them all on trial at the same time. And because the Panthers could not clone Arthur Turco and they could not clone William Kunstler, they couldn't handle all of those trials at the same time. And so as a result, we wound up with dozens of Panthers serving 30, 40, 50 years in prison. Guess what, Cliff?
Because they had, they're supposed to, that will work now, didn't they?
Yeah.
They had
our enemies have a cooperative coalition. Mm-hmm. They've got a cooperative coalition between big money, resource extraction, the polluters, the mass media, the legal flimflams that they mm-hmm. go at us, the police repression, military repression abroad. They've got their own cooperative coalition, but it's a cooperative coalition of death for us. And if we want to fight back against all of those enemies that are coming at us from different directions at the same time, we need to develop our own.
That's right. We need to have our own Pentagon. We need to have our spoke of the will. Well, I mean, seriously, that's what we have to do. You know, like I said, don't take a lot of people, but we need people from all of these different areas and groups, you know, maybe two or three groups. Not all of them ain't going to join, but we can at least get one or two on each one of them. And then we just sit down and pop and watch what happens.
We get enough people who will drop their egos.
That's right. You know,
and say, let's work out a way that there's an old saying they say, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. Well, the person who said that is half right. No, it's not a sprint. It's not a marathon either. It's a relay race. You run your leg and you hand the baton off to the next person and they run their leg. And the fact of the matter is, if the person you just handed the baton off to, if you root against them and they cramp up or they drop the baton, guess what you lose to?
That's right. Lose the race. That's right. Everybody lost.
Yeah. And I was an anchor on the mile relay team in high school. I know what it's like to say, come on, man. Win your leg. And half the time they lose their leg, and I wind up having the other guy down from 10 yards behind.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, little simple things in life, the simpler things in life, that's what confuses us so much. You know, the little things that separates us, that's, we focus more on that than the 90% of the thing that we fight for, because we all say we're fighting for the same thing. But we always let that little 10% of that stuff, well, I raise my fist this way. No, you raise your fist that way. So that separates us, even though we call ourselves putting up a power sign.
Yeah. I spell Africa with a K, and you spell it with a C.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, we're going to have to fight now.
I got red, black, and green, but you don't have the yellow on your arm. So,
yeah.
So they're going to, you know, that kind of stuff, you know. But again, I'm just saying to us on here, if, in order for us to get things done, because I tried some things, I'm just saying I've seen some things work and some things that didn't work, but I do know one thing, that it does take a team, and I'm trying to do that through you. If you may not notice it now, that's what I try to do through the National Black Unity News. See, I brought a whole bunch of independent people. They don't work for me. They all their own people. But when I call them together, we have an interest together. And they have all types of skills and talents that I need, you know, to get things done. And so we get things done. We self-sufficient. And that's how we roll. And we're different from every newspaper that way. And not only that, for the first time in my life, I tell people too, and it's the truth. I seen a glimpse of unity for the first time, and that through my own newspapers. I see now these people come together now. They respect one another. They love one another. Man, the love I got when I came out the hospital, the thing that they offered me, and not only that, but every one of them, when one of them got in the situation, I seen the other members. They stepped up and they jumped right there. You know, I mean, just last week, one girl was going down 95. A car, her transmission went up. Somebody was in Petersburg. He jumped in the car, went over and got her. You know, and normally they wouldn't be, I don't know, man, you know, she on her own, you know. But now, because they had this relationship with them now, because of the paper, they family. So they jumped in that car without a heartbeat.
You've established a cooperative with the National Black Unity News. But Brother Malon, who I don't know whether his hand is up by accident or not, but Brother Malon has established a cooperative with the IBA.
Right.
And we just need to get into that all the way around.
You good, bro? You want to say something, brother?
I did. It was up for a reason, because y'all have been hitting on some good things all night. For one, Brother Cliff, you already know, as Murphy identified, that wheel of yours is a highlight because of the categories that you got into. Filling it with key positions that can operate each of those wheels as a task owner will be the next step. But one thing I wanted to highlight is if you look at the Panthers and you look at Black Wall Street, both in my mind kind of failed state-to-state operations. Right, and I explain why, because with the Panthers, there was no centralized training. There was no training. So if I start the Black Panthers in Oakland and I'm now in Cali and I'm in Baltimore, those three charters are functioning independent. There was no lifeline that allowed the same status, the same standard to be applied.
And ultimately, there was a rift that developed East Coast to West Coast.
It has to be. It's inevitable at that point in time, right? And so now we fail that way. Then when you look at Black Wall Street, one of the biggest things I highlight, we can grow economic businesses, but where is the militia? Where
there is the we had an army that we could at least put some of that off, you know? And then and again, they would have thrown it twice.
Right. And it's both because if you hear, as you hear from the testimony, they're talking about that was the first, one of the first out of the history shows aerial attacks, right? Meaning we got bombed, Black Wall Street got bombed, but here's my problem. Like, how does the plane make it? You're flying at some point in time to get to us, so you're state by state by state by state, and we're not even able to drop as much of a warning off to each other like, hey, y'all need to get the heck out. They're coming. So I think that as we begin to expand, it's going to be important that we can light up the globe, light up whatever with a few phone calls that will allow us to know and keep ourselves in the knowledge. You know, and that being said, like most of what's coming next is, as you said, Murphy, going to have to be outside of a Zoom. It's going to have to be on a platform that we know is not recorded, not, you know, being tapped.
Milan, let me ask you a question. In your own little circle right now, I'm talking about strategically. You know, I'm just saying this, you know, you got a nice little network. Now, you know, some people got some strengths over here. Some people got some things over here. Some people like that. Now, you know who to put them, you know, with this. And it's the same thing when I see when I meet so many people and I met so many people over there. I know people who are very in intelligence agency. They know stuff, you know, because they work there. They used to be in there. You know, they know this technology. I know people who know security. So I'm talking about, you know, protecting computers and stuff. I mean, they are professors and stuff in this stuff, you know. And it's that, and they know what's going on. I used to tell people, I used to get letters from people in those industries trying to warn me to tell people to say this is what's taking place and stuff like that. All I'm saying is this, we got people that's willing, able, and ready, but somebody needs to take a stand and say, it's time, I need to talk to you.
So I got one more thing. For one, you guys know, I think everybody here pretty much is willing to take that stand. How we're going to do it is going to be the next question. In response to the attorney, I know this is old news at this point, but we need to go back and follow up with Sister Eartha, the work that we're doing with the Million Man March. The gentleman who was the attorney for, what are they called? The five of New York that were on the Netflix special, The Kids.
I mean, the exonerated five, you're not talking about the Central Park five. Right?
So they call
him the exonerated five now.
Right. So he was the attorney that not only got them released, but then got them funded after they got released. He is still active, from my understanding, at least somewhat of an activism mind and background. I don't know exactly where he is in the game now, but I think it might be worth a shot of us reaching out to consider what we were talking about earlier in the call. If he is moving in that capacity still and we have the direction for him to go, let's make some connections. You know what I'm saying? See what he's willing to do.
All right. Well, you know, ladies and gentlemen, you know, I'm going to have to get up off here because I'm on. Got to take care of the body, too. And but look, next week, because all of y'all should be are planned to be at the event next week. Brother Kaliga, if you can make it, sir, I would truly appreciate it. But there's going to be a lot of sitting down at the tables. People all over the place. And that's what I'm hoping to happen. Because when you got a lot of people that's willing workers out there, and when they come together, you know, we already, nobody got to tell us that we need each other. We know this. but are you willing? Because, you know, a lot of them have been beat up. They tried that, me, myself, and I think they know it ain't going to work. You know, they done tried it, and it just don't work. Now, I believe people have come to a consciousness now that we had no other recourse but to work with one another if you really want to make some changes. And Brother Cliff, man, I'm just going to say this to you, sir. In all honesty, I ain't patronizing you, no, because I'm about, I tell you, I go whip all without you. If you don't, I will. But I'm just saying that the concept, and I like the concept, and I do think that we can get key people in the concept to do things. But, you know, it's going to take an effort. You know, of course, it's going to take an effort. But I do believe there's one or two here and there that know how to humble themselves and see the whole picture. Don't look at ourselves, because you got to take the picture off us and our organization, our way of doing things. You know, we got to learn to do that collective works and, you know, and powwow together. And even if things don't go the way you see it sometimes, you know, we still, you know, we have to work as a team, as that will turns, you know. Because there's going to be a day that you're going to need that spoke yourself, you know, for whatever you're doing. But I do know, and I believe what's going to take place is once we start making things happen, demanding things to happen, and when they do happen, it's going to awaken a lot of people.
Yeah, once you start winning games, everybody.
Oh yeah, everybody wants to go on the team then. Yeah, they want that ring too. They want to be on the
ball. your jersey will sell out in all the sports goods stores once you start winning.
Yeah,
games.
That's always going to happen. Yeah, that's always going to happen. That's when we have to start watching out then. You know, because, you know, a lot of people are going to want to tear that spoke apart. They're going to be wanting to join the team too. But you know, but like I say, that's why you have to have a will within a will sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? you know what I'm saying. But in any case, for gentlemen and ladies, I'm going to have to get up off here. It's been a pleasure. And I'm a student, and I always learn something. And let's just make it happen. You know, the mind promised to us. But if something that you've done and you know that it works and it will work, and you know that it can be a blessing to a multitude of people. I mean, it can actually save lives, enhance people's lives. Then it's worth every effort. It's worth every effort that we can save some of our brothers and sisters. This thing is so good to me that I see things like these documentaries coming up now about what has happened in the past, because they can repeat itself. And they trying to already, because they preparing to do it. We already know that the militia groups in all over this country is mounting up and waiting to do it.
Yeah.
And we'll do it probably if we do build it up. But this time we should know better. Like my brother said, we should have intelligence there. We should have our militia there. We should have everything there. And then one thing about a person, even a fool would know this. Remember we said in hood, you got to bring something to get something. And you think twice about that sometimes, you know. Even a bully knows that. When you hit him back, he think twice about hitting you sometimes. And so, you know, and that's the way we have to look at things. And it can be done, could be done, and it will be done if we do it. And so I'm gonna say good night with that. You know, y'all take care.
All right.
Good night.
All right, good night, David.
Take care.
Goodbye.